your tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, step by step, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I am a recovered alcoholic. My name is Mike. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise and might and will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everyone ready? Let's start the meditation. What always helps me with meditation is I like to focus on my breath. We're going to open with the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, you can find it in the pews in front of you. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. I ask that everybody keep in mind we are guests here, so please keep your feet off the kneelers and the pews in front of you. Also, we have a cry room up top if anybody has young children they would like to bring to the meeting. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Theory to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it is kind of important to know what one is.
My name is Theory. I'm an alcoholic. Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bringing about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped in an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just turn them off. Our speaker tonight is Peter Marinelli. It's been a great honor and experience so far to experience him speaking. So let's welcome Peter.
My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I want to thank our very serious chairperson. Were you ever a judge in your last life? I was waiting to have Pat, waiting to be sentenced for a minute. Great job. Glad to be here and share with you my experience, strength, and hope. June 23rd was my separation from alcohol. And thank the good Lord, I'm not that guy who came in June of 1988 with the powerful desire not to drink for a few reasons. My big book tells me that the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail, so that would have been short-lived. And the guy who came in June of 1988 was full of a lot of street belief systems and ideas and values, and I was loaded with contempt prior to investigation, which this gentleman read tonight about. I was loaded with fear, but I thought no one could see it or even hear it, and everyone saw it and heard it. I dressed, I had the clothes on my back that I was living in the streets with, and the clothes I had was sent to me eventually by my youngest brother. And at the time, I was fitting into about a 24, 25-inch waist, and I was using his sneakers. And so I want no part of that guy around. But even if you dress me up and put me in a really nice suit in June of 88 and gave me expensive jewelry and a pocket full of money, I was still a drunk without a drink in me. And my behavior and my language and my attitude and outlook upon life reflected that. Where I am today is looking to seek this power of God and go to any lengths to get it. I'd rather bear the agony of waiting for God than to go through life without God. And so my work reflects that. My life hopefully reflects that. And if I'm open enough, God will give me words to talk about that. The great thing we get to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, especially with nine, when we're out of the nest and go out there healing, we make amends, and there's a healing that takes place. A healing for those folks, because when I make amends to someone, part of that drama in their life has been put to rest. And if all of us in this room went out and made amends tonight to one person, just think of the effect that that would have. Maybe my amends isn't that powerful, but to that person it is. And if we times that by a few hundred people, the impact we'd have on them spiritually. And healing, what happens when I make amends, healing takes place. And what that really does is, I'm trying to get this right now, what's coming to me. Healing speaks for the power that we can't really speak about. The action we take in making amends leads to a great healing, which is all God. We can see that happening, but we really can't talk about that power, because any words I come up with is always inadequate when I talk about the power called God. But we can see it in action, and those people begin to experience that. Because they remember us when we were harming them. And now they see a new person in front of them, giving them words and taking actions to repair. Because one of the great things we do in step nine is, what can I do to make this right? And stand ready to make it right. It just isn't a simple apology. And whether they say, you're good, it's okay, or they ask us to follow through with some action, there's a healing that takes place. And that's all godly. And we transcend worldly stuff and step into the world of the Spirit, which is what begins to happen as I clean up the wreckage of my past. I think a couple of weeks ago when I was here, I was sharing with everyone that I really can't enter the world of the Spirit if I'm still hooked up to the past. I really can't go to practice 10 and 11 the way the big book talks about and promises that are going to come to me if I'm still attached to wreckage of the past. And so as I clean up the wreckage of my past, those nine-step promises begin to materialize, and what I do is I move into step 10. In June of 1988, I knew nothing about that. It sounded really good, though. But I had no idea how to get there. And I quickly found out that even though I was making meetings, I was still running around, experienced different sorts of sprees, and I still looked like a drunk and a dophine, even though I was clean and sober. I had noise in my head all the time. What we get to do as a result of this work is finally get to a place that is where we truly be, that stillness. It's a great place to arrive and then enhance when we finally get to a place of stillness, of silence, which is what 11 talks about. The meditation part of our work in step 11 is about experiencing stillness and getting unhooked from the mind. But something happens along the way, that journey to get there. Little by slowly, I start to get unhooked from the mind, and I start to enjoy the sounds of silence, if you will, the peace, the ease, the comfort that I get being in my own skin, in my own company. Stillness is not separate from us. It feels that way when we first come into Alcoholics Anonymous because I got all the wreckage of my past right here. And I can hear it in my head. I'm worried about later on. I'm attached to what happened before. I'm worried about later on and what happened before. And this is how I operate. And I see the world through the mind. I hear through the mind. I speak through the mind. I be through the mind. And fear is written all over it. The fear of being alone is what it comes down to all the time. When we look at our inventories, it's always about fear. No matter what I'm writing about, it's always about fear. The fear of dying, fear of not getting what I want and losing what I have is what the 12 and 12 says. But at the end of the day, it's about being alone. Even fear of dying, we always say, well, it's fear of the unknown. Part of that unknown is I'm going through that alone. And many of us, I'm one of them, will go down very dark alleyways into sordid spots and hang with people, sleep with people, do things with people for one reason. I don't want to be alone. What we have in here, Bill called the herd instinct. We kind of hang together. And when we're new, it's really difficult to leave the group and go home alone in the car because the voices wake right up. I don't want to be alone. The great thing about this work, the 12 Steps in the Big Book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it will bring me to a place of never being alone because I walk in confidence with this power called God. I walk in reliance to this power called God. I continue to seek this God. So even though no one's around and there's really nothing going on in my life, in fact, my life appears to be very ordinary and unnoticed, but what's going on inside of me is very extraordinary. It's called God, which is a pretty neat way to live an ordinary life, chopping wood and carrying water, going to our jobs, whatever we do, taking care of our kids, mowing the lawn. It looks really ordinary. It can be ordinary on the inside unless I'm right with God, and then everything's extraordinary because I get to mow my lawn. I get to take my kids to school. I get to go to a home group. I get to go to work. I get to pray. Everything's a get to rather than I better, I have to, I need to. That's the conversion. And it's called freedom. Freedom of the bondage of self. Freedom of me. But if I'm trying to approach this work without the 12 steps and without a sponsor, I'm probably headed for trouble because I'm sponsoring me. And I don't have the ability to discern what's me and what's God. I get the two mixed up. And what I take is convenient. Well, this sounds like God. That doesn't sound like God. The 13 step sounds like God. Getting a job doesn't sound like God. But I have a sponsor who's going to coach me through this, who's going to pull the covers off the ball and take the peel back the layers of the onion, if you will. And little by little, I get closer and closer and closer to truth. And that truth is my relationship with God. Know the truth, and the truth will set you free. The truth is God. But I need someone to guide me through that and to reveal to me when I'm lying to myself and I'm in a place of delusion or illusion and when I'm actually experiencing truth. And little by slowly, I start to walk through this work and I learn a whole bunch about me by doing step five. I begin to see it in four, but the oral piece where I'm actually sharing it with the sponsor and I get to hear myself saying this stuff out loud, half of it I would say, I can't believe I actually felt this way or did this. Do you hear yourself? And then I get feedback from a sponsor, good feedback, who's not getting paid $150 an hour to listen to me. He's doing it for fun and for free. His heart and soul is in the primary purpose of helping a drunk stay sober. It's a completely different environment than a professional environment. Because with the sponsor, they might hang in there for 2 or 3 hours with you, depending upon the sponsor, and at 55 minutes or 50 minutes, they don't say, my time is up. Completely different rhythm, different culture. It's a great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, for fun and for free. And I begin to hear myself say some of these things and how I was operating and navigating through life, and then I get the feedback from the sponsor, who tweaks it a little bit more, who sharpens the tools a little bit more, and raises the level of awareness to lengths I could never, ever expect. And sometimes we come out of five and we're just grateful we got done with five. And we feel like we're a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. And some of us come out of five enlightened. Either way, we're good because we completed the work, and in doing, we succeed. And then the big piece of the work comes next is 6 and 7. What am I going to do with the stuff that we learned about in 5, the things I consider are objectionable? Many of those defects of character, I'm more than willing to cut loose. But some of them I got so attached to, I believe it's who I be now. It's part of this identity I've acquired. What am I going to do about this stuff? I know how to operate being dishonest. You're telling me to be honest. I hear vulnerability. I don't hear humility. I hear humiliation by being honest. How could I possibly be honest? How do you navigate through life being honest? Because I'm also worried about, if I'm honest, what you're going to think of me. And if you don't like what I have to say, that means you're not my friend. You're going to leave me. Oh, my God, I'm all alone. I'm going to die. Back to that again. Now, those defects of character are great because they beget new defects. And their goal is to get me drunk or dead. They don't care. And little by slowly, it becomes another obstacle that I may not be able to overcome in getting close to God. When I say close to God, I don't mean literally proximity, because there is no proximity when it comes to God. I can't be separate from that power, which I already am. But there's a feeling of separateness, and that's what defects do. They clog the drain. And I can't overcome the defects on my own. That's delusional. I can't work on my defects. I hate to say I'm working on my defects. Good luck. Who's working on the defects? The same guy who makes defects. Those defects don't want to go. Or the shortcomings, same thing. So I need to call on the power. A lot of times what this work does, if you look at the layers under the steps, they're driving us back to God, the need for God. If we look at the 12 steps, it's like you open up a book and there's a title of a chapter. But you don't know what it's about until you read the print. And so what the 12 steps do, they're kind of titles, and underneath each one are layers of work to do. 6 and 7 has 2 paragraphs. And people said it can't be too significant, it's only 2 paragraphs. Even Bill didn't pay a lot of attention to them. But what would happen if we pulled those 2 paragraphs out of the 12 steps? What happens if we remove 6 and 7? How could I possibly get in a place of humility to actually write down a list of people I've harmed and moreover go see the people who I despised in my 4th step and sit there hat in hand and make amends? That's only going to happen as a result of doing 6 and 7. I mean, the rest of the work also, but 6 and 7 is going to fine-tune. Fine-tune me enough to show up to your doorstep and make repair. Not say I'm sorry. Make the approach, which means I show up. And finally make the amends, which means that body of work is completed. I've made financial restitution, I've made a new fence, whatever it is, I've bridged the gap between you and I. And when I go make amends, it isn't about me making amends to you so we can be buds now. That may never happen. Even when I forgive someone or they forgive me, it isn't that we're going to become best friends. That's not the motive. It's about repairing the wreckage I caused out of my effort to live life on self-will, period. And if friendship comes out of that, great. If it doesn't, that's okay too. But I still need to show up to you to fix that. Because as long as I don't do that, I am never getting free. I am never present to the moment, which is the only place I'm going to experience spiritual freedom, is in the present moment, in the breath, because that's where God is. Anything other than the present moment, I'm listening to me and the noise in the head. But stillness is inseparable from who we be at the depth, and that's only in the present moment. What a great place to live. Imagine being able to operate in that place while we're out there in la-la land, because it's nuts out there, going through, driving 95, going to work, going to Publix, whatever we're doing, but coming from that still, quiet place, which, by the way, is louder than everything. It speaks to us. It cuts through all of it. But most often, we're attached to noise, and the silence feels offensive. I'm uncomfortable with the silence. Sometimes I do these workshops, and I'll get up to this podium, and I'll just stand here for about 2 or 3 minutes without saying a word. Now, some of the elders know exactly what's going on. If they don't, they say, okay, he's not ready to speak, so I'm just going to close my eyes and be still until he's ready. But a lot of other folks are going, what happened? What's going on? He's drunk. I knew it. They start talking, they start shifting in their chair, they're looking at their watch, they're in panic mode. You guys are in panic mode because I'm not doing anything. It got too quiet. Somebody's do something. I remember years ago, my old sponsor, when he was alive, he did a workshop upstate New York with this gentleman, Joe H. And it came time for dinner, and Mark and Joe, in front of the room, we made a prayer, and he says, "We're going to observe silence till further notice, starting with dinner." I said, "Okay, let's do it." I couldn't do it. 5 minutes at that table with no noise, and all you can hear is people eating and the dishes clanking, I felt like I was just going to explode. Somebody scream, do something, let a fire truck come by, let a fight break out, do something. Mark said to me, "How'd you do with that?" I saw it was good. He says, "No, you weren't." I said, "You're right, it was terrible. I was crawling out of my skin because I couldn't embrace that kind of silence." And in reality, that's where we come from. It's smothered with noise. So I stopped making amends. And our Big Book says we feel a man is unthinking when he says sobriety is enough. What a great line in the Big Book. We feel a man is unthinking or woman when they say sobriety is enough, which means I didn't drink today, I'm a winner, that's enough. According to my Big Book, it is not enough. In fact, when you're around here a while and do this work, you will find that don't drink and go to meeting is selfish and self-centered and self-absorbed. It's all about me. I don't care about the train wreck I caused coming in here and the lives I wrecked coming in here. I didn't drink today. Give me my cake. Give me my party. I am now Moses. Everything's cool. But when I get out there, I'm not free. And if some of those folks who I harmed happened to walk into the meeting that night because they maybe got into AA and sat down next to me, I'm really uncomfortable right now. I'm not in a place of saying welcome because I cleaned up the wreckage of my past with you. I am not free. I don't know if it was last week or if I even shared this story a bunch of years ago, going through the work for the first time. Our Big Book talks about how to approach the man we hated will arise. And a lot of us have somebody like that on the list, or a few. And I definitely had one of them. How to approach the man we hated will arise. Now, books is something like that. It turns out to be more beneficial. Those very challenging amends does something. It's total reliance and dependence upon God. But what happens on the back end, we have no idea. It's usually a God experience. The great thing about this work is we plow the field and God does the growing. We throw everything at something, but we don't go through the door. We let God open the door, not attached to results, only the effort, only the action. I participate in my recovery. And I wasn't going to go make this amends to this one gentleman because I still hated him. I did the inventory on him, but sometimes we can do inventory like we do 6 and 7. It's just a catalog of items with no transformation. We got a bunch of education, we got a bunch of information, but little in the way of transformation. And with this guy, it was cataloged. I hate this guy because he did in my whole second column. I did the third and fourth column. I wrote about where I was at fault. There was nothing heartfelt around that, because when I was reading it, I still wanted to beat him up. So I'm in a restaurant one time, and he's there with his family. And I'm sitting down about to order dinner, and I had to leave immediately. You know when you really get nervous and you're in a tight spot and the sweat on your forehead and your heart's like out to Philadelphia and you don't know what to do and you can't think, you can't eat, I got to get out of here. That's old behavior. The problem with old behavior, if I'm still doing it, it isn't old behavior, it's very current. Which means I was still being haunted by the past in the present moment, which did not exist. I mean, I was present. My ex-wife was sitting there. I knew the restaurant I was in. I was looking at the menu. I was present. But I, spirit, was not present. How could I claim freedom? How could I claim I've had a spiritual awakening as the result of these 12 steps when I'm sitting in a restaurant, there's somebody I didn't make amends to, and I wasn't walking across the restaurant saying, "You have a minute for me." I was out of there. And I called my sponsor. Well, there was more inventory to write on this gentleman. A lot more inventory. And a lot more prayer of willing to forgive. Even though I wrecked his apartment, I wrecked his home, I disturbed his life, I had to get to a place to forgive him because of the way he spoke to me. He called me every F-bomb you can think of the day he threw me out. I would not let that go. And I would not really, at a gut level, take a look at what caused him or what brought him to that place of saying, you blankety-blank, get out of my house. I disregarded that altogether. Well, through a bunch of inventory, a lot of prayer, and a willingness to forgive, I woke up one morning and got dressed, and I was saving money because I owed him like 3 or 4 months back rent, and I got dressed, and off I went to his house. And they let me in, and I sat down with them, and God gave me a calm, still presence about this. And it was trusting in God, Father, please give me the words to talk to this man. And when God calls, God calls. And I show up, and they let me in, and I sat down with him and his wife, and I began this process. I made the approach, and I was able to complete the amends. We had some words afterward, very friendly, and out the door I went, and then everything changed. What happened to me afterwards, the amends speaks about the power that we cannot speak about, and this is what I mean. I left his house. The next thing I can remember is kind of walking to my car. And the next thing I can only remember was putting the key in the door, walking into my apartment. He lived in a place called Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. I lived in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. 15 minutes or so drive, maybe 20. But I don't remember any of it. When I was walking towards my car, it was kind of like I was in a dream. And here's what went on. This is why you can't really talk about God, because how could you explain godly events? I felt as if my shoes never hit the concrete. Kind of like floating, literally, by the way, floating. And I remember my eyes watering because I was wrapped up, this light, just, I could actually see it, just wrap me up, and I was floating, euphoric. All the drugs and all the drink I put in my body, I couldn't get here. But I did God's work, and I got there. I remember going, oh, my God. I was just wrapped up in this, I guess you would call it limitless love, endless love, just this thing that I really can't describe to you. That's all I remember. Enlightened, euphoric, adjectives like that are good to describe it. I can't recall the drive home. In fact, when I put my key in the door, I says, how did I get here? The whole day was just different. My whole life was now different. Everything changed. And to, I guess the best way to describe it, any veil that I was looking through life with was finally removed. And any what was left of earplugs were finally taken out. And any blockage between me and God was finally removed. That's what it's like standing in the presence of God. You can't describe it. They got to experience some healing because I went to them and fixed that wreckage in their past. And in turn, I fixed wreckage in my past. There was nothing blocking me. That's not to say 6 months later, a month later, a week later, we're going to put something in that's going to block us once again. Because we will. That's our brokenness. But for that moment, I experienced my Creator. Now, the great thing about this power called God, he doesn't say, okay, you had one, that's all you're getting. It's endless. This God is pursuing every one of us, and God is going to any lengths to get us. We talk about, are we willing to go to any lengths to get sober? In the meantime, God's pursuing us and going to any lengths. This power is always talking to us right now. What we usually do is listen to the other voices in the head. We don't listen or even look for the God voice. But no matter if we got a pulse and we have a breath, God is speaking to us. And the clearer I am, the more I can hear. It's that undercurrent, that stillness that moves us. It's guidance. And sometimes it's as simple as, you shouldn't eat that, it's bad for you. Sometimes it's as simple as, that's a new person, go over and say hello. We tend to get attached to the Moses and parting of the sea. As one of my teachers said, stop listening for that and stop looking for that. Because I'm attached to a desired outcome. Stop it. God will say, just go talk to the newcomer. Just go talk to that old timer. Go feed that homeless person. While I'm shopping, we get one voice, another voice, and God says, go do this. Let her go first. It's simple like that. And once I start to get that, that's God speaking to me, then I'll build up enough where I will have that aha moment, that realization moment, and oh my God. But it's all the same voice. Who else is navigating me through the day when I wake up? A book says On Awakening. It may not be this parting of the seas. It's going to say, well, we got up late. We need to get to work. Thinking about it 24 hours a day. We consider our plans for the day, it says. So we're asking God, what do I do with my day? Get to work. And do an honest day's work while you're there. And then tonight we go to me. Thanks, God, got it. There's no Moses moment. It's simple. Chop wood. That's the chop wood, carry water. Getting your hands dirty, doing some labor, and not an applause for it. You're in the backyard building a hut. No one's giving you applause. But people are going to be able to live in that. So I begin to clean up the wreckage of my past. And something happens. We kind of move into step 10. Now, step 10, there's parts of step 10 that have gotten me, I think I shared this last time I was here, into some hot water, depending on where I was speaking, about saying I'm a recovered alcoholic. Because I always like to share, my name is Peter, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I don't say that because I'm special or try to separate myself from anyone in this room. My sponsors would have my head if I did that. My elders would call me on that. But they do tell me to share what my current experience is, what my truth is. Recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. What great news to shout to. I get a lot of new people in here that you don't have to be stuck where you are right now with the street thing up in here, fronting all the time, trying to show I'm somebody, trying to be Snoop Dogg and Cheeses all in the same moment. Right? I'm spiritual. What's your problem? You know, something like that. I just prayed, but I hate him. You know, I mean. I was getting drunk somewhere. I forgot where I was going. Okay. Enter the world of the Spirit. Oh, about getting me in trouble, this word called recovered. What some cats hear is, he just said he's cured. He's an egomaniac. They might be right. He's trying to be different. That's against Alcoholics Anonymous. At the end of the day, it's exactly what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. To get recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Simply put, the obsession and even thinking about the drink has been removed, not by what I've done, not because I'm a nice guy or a bad guy. It's just by God's mercy. Why? If I'm thinking about a drink long enough, I'm getting drunk. And once I get drunk, I get the phenomenon called craving. My book says I'll recover from that as well. Which means I'm no longer drinking. As a result of my God work, which means I'm in the sunlight of the Spirit. Now, God has pruned the tree enough to me to walk into the sunlight of the Spirit. Why? To get the new one at the door. Sam Shoemaker has a writing, stand at the door. We stand at the door, both literally and figuratively. We stand at the door. We look for the new guy or woman walking in so we can bear witness to this great power and this book, that it works. I'm living proof of it. And perhaps the old timer who's not finding their way anymore, has lost their way, or maybe has really gone to a place that he's afraid to talk about. And we don't judge it. We don't criticize it. We do nothing other than say, welcome. I got a way out if you care to have it. We bear witness. We stand at the door. That's why God does this work. It's not so I can get a nice fancy job with a fancy car and wear fancy clothes and hang out in AA so everyone thinks I'm somebody. I need to be unnoticed, if you will. Live the ordinary life, but do the extraordinary. And so God prunes the tree enough where at one time I would say, well, I'm too busy for this. We cannot help but walk to the door and meet the new person. We see them in the room. We see some of them who look banged up. And if you're in the sunlight of the Spirit, you're going over to them. Or you're going to grab some guys, you're going to grab some of the elder women and say, she's new. They know what to do. That's completely different than the way we used to operate. If you get up, we leave the meeting, and somebody leaves money or their wallet on one of those chairs, if you're in the sunlight of the Spirit, I don't know about this side of the room, by the way, but you're going to get it and say, hey, somebody's money or somebody's wallet. There was a time that was going in my pocket. But you can't do that anymore. In fact, it doesn't even enter your head to say, I can walk away. No, you can't. That's the transformation. Now we're doing God's work. Now I'm trustworthy. Now I have integrity. Now I'm a sober gentleman. Now I'm a spiritual warrior. Now God can send me out there and do battle with his or her demons, huh? We're loaded up. The tool belt is loaded. That's why God does what God does. And this work is so important because when I came in June of 1988, I had no tool belt, let alone any tools. It was all about me constantly. And the demons in my head, who can I be of service to? No one. No one. Now, my mind told me after 30 days I have something to offer. I had nothing to offer other than what I did to stay sober 30 days. And that came out to I made meetings. I had nothing to give as far as having someone have a spiritual transformation until I bottomed out in December of 1988. Again, and I begged for help. And then the train, the wheels started to move, little by slowly. And then I got a real sponsor who just pulled me ashore. So it says we enter the world of the Spirit. They talk about being recovered. They don't use the word recovered. But what they do is say this. We will see how our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. Back on page 24, they talk about how, and I'm paraphrasing, trying to think the drink through, play the tape to the end, remember where it comes from, keep it green. It's futile. It doesn't work. The memory of suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago do not crowd into my mind to stop me from picking up a drink. It's futile. So when I tell a newcomer, remember the pain of yesterday, I'm killing him. Because it might work today, it might work tomorrow, but by Sunday he's drunk. And I'm going to say, well, he didn't want it. What I should have told the newcomer, he's got a big book, let's start. Today's Thursday. By Sunday, you can have your 8-step list. Monday, go make some amends. Dr. Bob did this in 4 hours. We take 45 years to get through the first step. I tend to exaggerate from time to time. We will see how a new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. This is the miracle of it. I'm not fighting it. Neither am I avoiding temptation. I feel as though I've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Watch this. We have not even sworn the stuff off, meaning that's it, I'm not drinking. We don't do that. We don't have to do that. And here's why. Instead, it says the problem has been removed, and then they back that up by saying it does not exist for us. Think about that. That thing that brings you into rehab all the time with the hep C, the marks on the arm, the abscesses, underweight, malnutrition, want to die, and still thinking about doing it again to combat this thing I got going on. The drink's killing me, but the drink right now is the only thing that's going to get me away from how much I want to die. That's all removed. Think about the freedom in one day. Just think about this. The freedom in one day if my mind didn't even think about using any mood or mind-altering substance. It didn't enter my realm of thinking not once today. Think about that. How free are we right now? Because I know a lot of you cats here had thoughts all day long. It doesn't make you a bad AA. You're new. That's what you get. But what if we went in there, got one there with a little screwdriver, and pulled that thing out, where you went through an entire day till the time you go to bed, and not once did your mind say, I wish I could. Now let's go further to maybe some greed issues, some lust issues, some anger issues, my fear stuff. If little by slowly God plucked that out, Just think of how much freedom you have in a day and how it forces you to be in present to the moment, which means I'm free of me. Who could I be of service to? It's the next thing we do. Because I'm not consumed with me. If I'm consumed with me, I'm not going to be of service to you. Because it's all about me. So my book tells me I'm going to get recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Not cured, but recovered. Now the way I get recovered, we get recovered, we can get unrecovered. If I stop chopping wood and carrying water, guess what? The illness starts to wake up. It doesn't take much for it to wake up. And here come old, insane thoughts again. Here comes some old behavior again. Here comes the, the voices in the head again. Here comes some funky language coming out of my mouth. Here comes some words to hurt people. And as another book says, it's not what goes in the mouth that defiles a man, it's what comes out. And what comes out, the things that hurt people, is because of where I now am. Where does my heart lie? Because that never lies. Where does my heart lie tonight? Because where my heart lies, if it's with God, then I'm not hurting one intentionally. But if I've drifted from God, I'm running the show. And some bad things are going to happen. Maybe not changing the world, bad things, maybe. But I'm going to snub people. I'm going to gossip about people. I'm going to hurt people. I'm going to take money. I'm going to look for property and prestige regardless of how I have to get it and step over people. And then I gain the world and then I lose my soul. And at the end of the day, there's a drink waiting for Peter Marinelli. Now, my illness is not going to tell me there's a drink waiting for you. It's just going to say, go get it. This blind ambition. It tells me it's easy to let up on my spiritual program of action and rest on my laurels, my accomplishments of yesterday. I've heard folks say, I remember when I went through the work, I was on fire. Or I had those experiences. And they're riding off of those experiences, whether it be 6 months, a year, 5 or 10 years ago. When I went through the work, when I was a newcomer, which has given them permission to coast. And we might feel good for a while. But if I got sober enough to think I can never get drunk again, I'm in deep water. If I've gotten spiritual enough where I think I can never get drunk again, I'm in deep water. And that's why I'm one of those folks. I went through the work one time and one time only into 10, 11, and 12, and that works for you great. But I found some problems with that. And I despise people who said they were going through 1 through 9 into 10, 11, and 12 annually. And when I bottomed out in AA, that's what I did. And I'm here to bear witness about that end of the work. I never want to drift from God. I never want to pick up a drinking gun. I love the effect produced by God, so I go through to work again. And it sharpens my tools to be of maximum service to others. I don't need any cobwebs from yesterday hanging around. And they're there. And the more I go through to work, the more I clean house. You know, here's a silly analogy, but everyone gets when it comes to talking about the old days. When you open up that little envelope and you put it wherever you're going to put it, I bet you everyone licked the inside of the envelope. You didn't say it was a little residue, throw it out. You got everything in there. Alcoholics have no idea what I'm talking about. My little dolphins know what I'm talking about. I did that walk. Open up the envelope, you put it in there. Right? When it comes to saving my life and spirituality, I got a lot of residue. I do nothing about it. Leave it there. The whole thing doesn't make sense with some of us. Okay. I'm headed for trouble if I do rest on my laurels, my accomplishments of yesterday. We're not cured of alcoholism. What I have is a daily reprieve, which is a stay of execution, which hinges on my maintenance of my spiritual condition. Care of the soul. How am I doing with that? And here's my prayer. God, let me carry the vision of your will into all my activities. Your will, not mine, be done. A page and a half of incredible spiritual information. It tells me what to do as I'm navigating through the day. If I've harmed someone, make amends promptly, not in 90 days. I turn to God at once. I seek his guidance. What I sometimes do will write some inventory. I make amends, and who can I be helpful to? And sometimes it's the person that I was just angry with, that I'm able to be clear enough to be of service to them. We have no idea what's going to happen. This is called world of the spirit. So nothing's very tangible. I go from what I know very tangible to the world of the unknown. It's one thing having spiritual beliefs. It's another to live the spiritual beliefs. And they're asking me to live my spiritual beliefs right now. Trying to explain this whole life adequately from this podium, I discover my limitations in a big way. But the spirituality walk has no limitations. And each one of us will get, as God sees fit, the portion that he sees fit to give us. And it's always better than what I was giving to myself. When we talk about the fellowship of the Spirit, we look within the spirit of the fellowship, the godliness in the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. The whole movement doesn't make sense. We're 81 years old. The whole thing doesn't make sense. How we could survive 81 years with the different walks of life, with the different personalities, with the psych folks and the non-psych folks, the people coming in who are duly addicted, with all the information, all the pamphlets, the treatment centers, and whatever goes on in there. How we survive 81 years. It's because God has AA in the palm of his hands, safe and protected from us. Because we will do AA in faster than any outside service or entity. So God keeps us safe and protected. There's a couple of more things. I'm starting to run out of time. It tells me if I enter the world of the Spirit, my next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And here's the question. What am I doing currently to grow in understanding and effectiveness? What's that currently look like? Am I being trained by God through this work and transformed? Am I serving God? Am I serving the world? What does that look like? What inspirational books am I working with? Not just reading and cataloging them, but working with them, trying to take those principles into all my affairs. Do I have a prayer life? Do I have a life of meditation? I know we're in 10, but by now I should have a life of prayer and meditation. I should have a godly relationship. Am I transcending worldly things at this point? This is step 10. This isn't step one where I'm deaf, dumb, and blind in a place of surrender. This is spiritual growth. I've been working out in a spiritual gym for a while now. Whether it's 30 days, 60 days, or 90 days, I've been in the work. Some transformation has taken place. How am I doing? What am I doing to grow in understanding and effectiveness? Am I seeking this power called God? More than anything else, more than the food I eat, because that's the way it has to be for someone like me. He'll give me food to eat, give me a place to lay my head at night. But that can't come first. It's got to be about this power called God. And blessing him for everything we get. Walk in a spirit of gratitude. Because what I've learned from my own experience and countless others, very often when I see hard times or challenging times coming at me, and I'm wondering, God, why this? It's only for a greater purpose. It's a huge pruning of a tree to move me from where I am, where I think I own, to a new place. And that has to go on in order for him to move me to be a maximum service to him. Because what the walk in AA and recovery is not about my walk, it's about his walk. It's about by playing with God's rules. He took away the drink. He took away the drug. He gave me this program. Now I need to go to work for him. Am I still willing to do that? Do I walk in a spirit of gratitude with a great spiritual practice? Walk in gratitude. Walk in confidence with God. Step 10. The mind can't figure this out, by the way. The mind can't wrap its arms around this. The mind is saying, now hold on a second. I need some money. You know what God will do sometimes when we need money? Let us go work in a homeless shelter or a soup kitchen. What does this have to do with money? Because suddenly when I come home, I'm really grateful for having my own food on the table, even if it's a ham sandwich. I'm feeding myself. I'm healthy. I have a home to go to. And those very same folks who are in a homeless shelter saying, at least I got a cot. I'm not on the street. We get clear. And all of it's for a reason. I couldn't understand why I was homeless. I come from a nice family. We have our stuff, completely dysfunctional. Sometimes we love the wrong way. Sometimes we bark the wrong way. Why did I wind up homeless? How did this happen? All my friends are married, college degrees, making six figures. I'm in an abandoned building. I don't get it. I get it now. I was sharing with Marion earlier in meditation this morning. A lot of noise about a lot of things. Career, this, that, and the other thing. I said, Father, please, just help me navigate. Clear as a bell. You teach, I will take care of everything else. As if God just leaned on and says, you teach, I got everything else. Okay, got it. Let's go to work. So God put me in a back of a hallway and turned me in what I was so I can come here and meet that little dauphine in the back who just got out from an abandoned building. Has no idea what Park Avenue looks like, nor do I, but I can get you out of the basement. And I know about the humiliation, degradation, about soiling your clothes and not even caring and being in the back of a building. And suddenly I'm talking to you about God. I know I got you curious. I know I got you interested because I know what that's like. That guy outside this church every Sunday laying on the every Thursday laying on the floor. Not pleasant to be around. My heart breaks. Inches and seconds, I didn't go from the abandoned building to be that, never coming home. That's a lost soul. Inches and seconds. And sometimes all I need to do is make that one more amends, one more prayer of forgiveness to rocket me. But I don't know which one. I don't know which one. The same thing when I'm doing inventory. A whole bunch of work in the inventory. And it might be that one thing, that one resentment towards one person, that one fear about one particular area of my life, that one sexual misconduct, that one thing of all the inventory that I get rocketed with and get free. I just don't know which one. So God has me chopping lots of wood and carrying a lot of water. And as I said from the Million Podium, the carrying the water, God carries his water in broken pots. That's me. He doesn't need something pristine and full of diamonds. He needs a broken soul like me to surrender to him, and he'll serve me and say, go help my kids. Just teach. I got the rest. And that's all I got. Peace.
Can we thank the speaker one more time? Now the secretary is going to come up and do the report.
Hi, my name's Fred. I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Mike to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism, recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship. From the forward to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous, of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please stand up. Everyone who's available for sponsorship, can we please meet them up here after the meeting? Please join us Monday nights. We have a big book study in the other room where the big book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print big book and big book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.
Tonight's session and all the past speakers are available for podcasts at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everybody to our Monday night big book study. And those whom wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. The power and the glory forever and ever.
Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing. When you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. Stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope.